I'm Tom Sturdy. I'm here in the old building. It is the 10th of July 2015. The time is about 20 to 6. And joining me today is...
I'm Carol Wayne, originally Carol Hornsey when I was here. My date of birth is May the 30th, 1943.
Perfect. So to begin with, I'm just curious about what happened to you after LSE. So after you got your degree, what happened to you next?
Well, I came back and then I did an MPhil in social psychology, which was called an MPhil sociology. So I did that until 1967. And then I stayed on here. I was invited to stay on by my psychology supervisor, and I became a research assistant and later a research officer in the social psychology department until 1972. I had two different jobs there. I was later a research officer because you got promoted. And the first project I worked on in that department was a joint study with the law department on the jury system. That was known as the jury project, strangely enough. And the two lawyers involved in it were the then Dr. William Cornish and Dr. David Thomas. So I know David Thomas became a professor later on. And I worked, the psychologists were Don Harper, who later, I think he later moved to Imperial College, and then there was Dr. Phil Seeley, both in the psychology department here. So that was a joint study of how juries worked using recording apparatus and all sorts of gadgets we had in the psychology department. And then in the end, that project ran out of money round about 1970-ish or end of 1970, I think. And then I worked for a very large study that was run by Dr. William Belson, that's B-E-L-S-O-N. He was the head of the Survey Research Centre, which had links with the psychology department. And it was a big outfit. And I was one of four research officers. We were taken on to do a major study, do the groundwork for the major study, which was the study of adolescent boys and the effects of television, and particularly looking at television violence. And there were four of us working on that with him, but we also had people doing the computer side and all the other things, admin staff and so on. And we started off working... I had an office in Clements Inn Passage when I was research worker, and I still had an office there when I worked for Bill Belson. But then the Survey Research Centre moved its offices to Soho, so the last few months I worked for that. I left in 1972, around July 72, to have my first child, a daughter. But those offices were in Wardour Street, so it was strange to be working in Wardour Street for the LSE. And we were doing the preliminary stages of the study, which was recruiting and interviewing adolescent boys aged from 12 to 17, plus their families, and also members of the public to assess the television programmes of the time and rate them for how violent they were and so on, what the content was. I was also doing some research in the background to the programmes in the BBC archives. And at the time of the study, the study went back to the 1950s when there was only BBC and ITV television. So it was looking at the sort of historical effects of TV. And later on, that study published a book in 1980 by Dr. W.A. Belson called Television and the Adolescent Boy. And I think my name, Carol Wayne, is given as a footnote somewhere once or twice because he took on other research staff. I left to have a baby, then other people replaced me. So I don't know quite what happened after that. So.
Oh, very good, very good. So during your time as a student here, were there any particular staff members, lecturers or classes that you remember fondly?
Yes, very much so. I did a lot of anthropology, so that the department upstairs spent a lot of time in. I remember Professor Lucy Mayer, who was my tutor for 1 year. She was quite a daunting figure, but she was very influential. I remember also a very nice lecturer who we all liked called Dr. I think he was a doctor, Bill Morris or William Morris. And then because I specialised later in psychology, social psychology, the head of department was Dr. Hilda Himmelwhite, whose cartoon is up there, I see. And she was a very glamorous figure, but also very pleasant, and also treated us all as a graduate student then, and we were all treated as very much as individuals, and she understood our needs, and I liked her very much, and, you know, she was somebody you could look up to.
Again, thinking about student life, what was the social aspect like? Were you part of any society?
Oh, yes, very much.
What did you do in the spare time?
I was very much a social animal in my undergrad years, and particularly from my second and third year. I was a little bit shy when I first came. But after about 6 months, what really made a difference for me was I thought I need to get into... I knew there was a lot of life going on. I just needed to find out where it was. And I was a good writer, and my mother was a journalist, so I decided to write for the Beaver. So I put myself forward as a journalist and immediately was asked to do some stories. And I had contacts through my mother's journalistic contacts with the cultural life of London at the time in the 60s. Also, I was very much getting into the rock scene, the R&B and so on. And I made friends with people who were similarly inclined, you know, who liked that sort of thing. My husband, who I married from here, a guy called Dave, knew Mick Jagger. It went to the same lectures as him. I was there at that time. But that came a bit later, actually going to see the Rolling Stones perform, which was not through the LSE. They used to perform in Richmond, where I lived, and I used to go and see them. But through the Beaver, I then became part of various student networks, was invited to parties. And then I lived in a large flat where my mother lived by Richmond Bridge, and I used to give parties there that my mother somehow tolerated. And they were quite successful. I had all sorts of people over there for, you know, very much part of the party network. And we went to the bar socials on Friday evenings, which was the BOP. I think it was called the BOP later on, but it was the bar social. And they used to have a band there called Jed Stone and the Raiders, who they were quite popular because they played all the music, you know, nearly everything that was a hit at the time they could play. They never managed to get the Rolling Stones to play here because as soon as they started having some success, and Mick Jagger left here after the first year, they priced themselves out of the market. But the only thing that did happen was that London University put on an all-nighter at the Alley Pally in 1964, and I by that time was well involved with the Students' Union and went along to be one of the many people behind the scenes. And the Stones were very much top of the bill there, along with the Animals. And dare I say it, Jimmy Savile was involved. But also I managed to get two of the Rolling Stones autographs, which I still have, because I was posted outside their dressing room doing some sort of duty. But also that was a really good, fun event as well. I'm sure there's other things I could say, but yes, we had a pretty good time here. There were also political demonstrations going on, and I got involved in that as well.
Wow. Quite a lot of social
Yeah,
life.
A lot of it, and it went on until, because I was here as a postgrad, and the demonstrations actually became a big thing when I was a postgrad, because that was when the anti-Vietnam protests were going on, and the Gates affairs, you know, the LSE. And by that time, I was a research worker here, and I became branch secretary of the local Scientific Workers Union. And so I was what they called a shop steward and had to go to meetings with the director and the academic board. And we were involved in representing two of the lecturers who got into trouble through the Gates affair. And we had involvement with the demos that went on 67 and 68. I took part in the 1967 one with my then husband, who was also from here, and we were carrying the banner for my trade union, and we were in Grosvenor Square at the time that was all kicking off. And in the 1968 one, I didn't actually go on the march, but the LSE opened itself up to take in people who were injured on the demonstration and to provide rest and recovery. So I was helping to run that section. And lots of people came in slightly bloodied, and some people were even giving blood transfusions. I'm not sure if they were necessary, but, you know, but mainly it was giving people cups of tea and sitting them down, that sort of thing. But there were also demonstrations against apartheid and South Africa House, as it then was, and what was going on in Rhodesia. So many things, a lot of political activity.
Right. So I'd like to go back to your first experience, basically, first day on campus.
Oh, yes.
What was that like?
Oh, I felt really overwhelmed, and I wasn't this very experienced, sophisticated person I became later. No, I was very shy. I'd come from an all-girls public school, not a boarding school, but it was all girls. I'd only had one boyfriend who I'd met when I was doing my A-levels, and before that, hadn't been going out much or anything, just doing my homework. So coming from a very quiet life to here, and such a melting pot of people from all different sort of ethnic groups, and also people from different social class backgrounds from myself. Like my husband was from a much more, who I met during the 3 years I was here, was from a working class background. I was middle class. People from different parts of Britain with different accents. But also just the size, it seemed very big, although I know it's small, it was small compared with what it is now. And so it took a bit of time to know your way around. And Freshers Week, there were all these people milling around, and all the societies were showing what they had to offer. I did join the film sock and the jazz sock. They were quite good things to start off with, because that was one way of getting a little foot in the door at the beginning. But I did feel very shy, and I felt quite tongue-tied, not sure what to say to people at first.
Great. And in terms of the campus itself, you said that even though it was quite small back what was sort of the sights and sounds of campus back then?
Well, going into the, I'm not sure what they call, we called it the refectory where people ate, and then it became known as the brunch bowl later on when I was working here, and I'm not sure if it's still called that or has another name, but that was always quite noisy because you always heard the clattering of plates, and the dinner ladies, who were all very friendly, would be sort of shouting things out, and quite a lot of hubbub of people talking, lots of people discussing things at the tables. A lot of the students were always talking, and once I got to know people, they were all talking about politics, international relations, you know, the Cold War. I mean, while I was here, the Cuban crisis was on. That was quite early in my time. And some of the guys I knew were from the International Relations Department, so that was all politics, big politics. So a lot of sort of raised voices in discussions, people laughing. And then the coffee bar, there used to be a little coffee bar up there near on the same floor as the refectory. And again, people would be talking in there, but that was a bit quieter than the refectory. We used to go out on the roof garden just on the same floor as the refectory, and from there you could hear the sounds of traffic and so on coming from the road. I think Houghton Street at that time wasn't a pedestrian precinct, so you could hear cars going through, which later on that was stopped, so it got a bit quieter, I suppose. They were the sort of sounds I remember, plus the noises of the bar social with the music, the rock and roll. Yeah, the Three Tuns in my day, I think it was just in the St Clement's building. I think it was all in there. And there was a pool room as well where some of the guys used to, I mean, the bloke I married, he used to play pool. And I do remember in one corner of the bar down there, the rugby club, you were getting drunk and chanting their songs and so on. But it was all down in St Clement's. It's been moved several times since those days.
And is there anything else that you would like to cover that we haven't necessarily covered?
Well, I wrote for the Beaver newspapers a series of articles about contemporary themes, all to do with the 1960s culture, fashion. I used to do film and theatre reviews as well, so I had tickets for the early James Bonds with Sean Connery, and also some theatre tickets and reviewed these. But I remember I did one column on fashion where we took... there was a trend for women to dress up in men's shirts for a bit with dark, thick tights. So we did a fashion shoot with one of the girls from here called Angela, who was very pretty with blonde hair, and she modelled these shirts. And it was, the headline was "Looks Even Better on a Man" or something like that. And then I did another column about CND. I did another column discussing men, which was called "Men, Men, Men," a bit of a sort of Glenda Slag, Private Eye does. It's a bit in that style. And I did one or two on more. I think the CND one was more serious because in my first year, I went on the whole Aldermaston CND march, and then I could write about it from my own personal experience. So, yeah, writing for Beaver I really enjoyed, and there was a sort of camaraderie with the other people who wrote for it. And we did think of ourselves as budding journalists as well.
Because where was the Beaver based at the time?
I'm trying to think. I think some of the time it was in the St Clement's building, but also some of the time I remember it being in the East building. I think it may have moved during the time I was here. And it was quite a small, cramped office, I seem to remember.
Was it noisy?
I think it was cramped and people... Because, I mean, I used to go out and do stories that I'd write about and bring in. I didn't really work in the office. I wasn't doing the editorial stuff there. So I didn't have to sort of spend much time there. I'd bring in what I'd written. I mean, we didn't have email or anything, so you'd had to bring in the article you'd typed and just hand it in.
Things have changed a lot.
Yeah, no email, no mobiles, nothing like... Just ordinary telephones, you know, landlines...
interested in what you were saying about London in the 60s, but also LSE in the 60s and all the protests. And do you have anything else that you'd like to say about that?
Yeah, well, LSE in the 60s, though, I mean, a lot. Somebody mentioned today the announcement about the death of JFK, John Kennedy, the US president. And I remember my little group were in Friday evening. I think it must have been a Friday. We were in the TV room, which was in the St Clement's. It was a common room where they had a television, old-fashioned TV. This came on the news that something terrible in America, and I think we all, by that time, we'd got that he'd died, and that terrible gloom came over all of us. And I think we were going to go and have the usual... we'd been going to watch, because that night they'd have Ready, Steady, Go on TV, and a lot of us were fans. But that night they didn't, and then we didn't do the bar social. I think some of us went off to the pub and had a drink and then all went home really sad. But that really left the impression on us. You know, as everyone says, you remember where you were. And another time also to do with that programme, Ready, Steady, Go, during the Student Rag Week, some people from the student union, which included me, gatecrashed it because... The studios, I think it was Rediffusion, backed onto the LSE, just there, behind where the old theatre is, roughly opposite the Peacock Theatre. And we found a way in through a sort of back entrance, and we went in. And we were all dressed up a bit. I was wearing one of these shirts I'd used for the article with black tights. And we got onto the programme. They didn't turn us away. I think they just thought the more the merrier, so they let us join in. That night, top of the bill was the Hollies. And there was a black American blues singer. I think it was a woman, very large lady. And we were just shepherded around and used as part of the TV audience and had a great time. And then afterwards, we tried to gate crash the party where the Hollies were. But, of course, they wouldn't let us in. I went with two girlfriends. They didn't let us in. Perhaps they thought we weren't pretty enough. And there was another rag week, which was, I think, in my second year, that the students, and this was a stunt dreamed up by the student union as well, occupied the Tower of London. And the headlines were in the Evening Standard, you know, front page, it said occupied and things like that. And this was to raise money for Rag Week. Again, we were wearing slightly fancy dress. And it's amazing because now with all the security and the fears of terrorism, that would never have been possible. We'd have been arrested before we got anywhere near it and just turned away. But at that time, we were able to just go in and take it over. And they got great big white sheets out where it said, they painted on it, LSE, occupation, and so on. And it was on the front page of the evening paper, like the Star and the Standard. So that was quite an amazing... I've still got little tiny black and white photographs of that because I took my camera along.
Wow, yeah.
I got little tiny smudgy photographs. It was quite something,
yeah.
Looking back on it.
I can imagine, Jesus. And did you ever run for student office? I mean,
I did all this other stuff. I didn't actually run. Actually, there was one problem with that, which was, I think LSE was still pretty sexist in those days. Every time a woman went up on the stage, there'd be a load of catcalls and wolf whistles and things like that. They did have a beauty competition, which I never went in for because I said, I'm not going to put myself in a cattle market. And it was quite a while before women started standing for the student union. I think they didn't start doing that until maybe another 10 years afterwards. The time I was still working here in 1971-2, there might have been a few women standing for posts by then, with Women's Lib coming along. But in the early to mid-60s, there was a lot of freedom, but women were expected to be subordinate to men in various ways. You know, and we were rather treated as sex objects, I'm afraid, and not many of us kind of did very much to overcome it, but I just wouldn't take part in the beauty competitions. That was where I put my foot down.
Is there anything more?
I can't really think. I mean, I could say I did, although I met my husband here, but I only got to know him sort of closely around the time we took our finals. And in fact, he was a little bit rude to me in the pub because he thought he'd failed his exams. But that sort of brought us closer together. Before that, I did have a few boyfriends here. One year, I think in my second year, I got quite friendly with some of the foreign students, and I went out with an Italian guy from here for a little while. And then I met an English guy who was one of the chaps on the international relations course who didn't work very hard. He was one of the alternative people who went around with black leather jacket and so on. And he was very lazy and he ended up with just a pass degree. But later on he went to Hornsey Art College. He wanted to do art really. He decided he wasn't really an academic student. It was art he wanted to do. But at the time, that I was attracted to that. But that one didn't work out. Eventually, then I met a friend of his who was a very nice chap who I nearly hit it off with. But at the same time, I'd also met the chap who was to be my future husband, who was from my year. And so we got together in beginning of 64, and we got married in 1965, sort of an LSE wedding. I was still working here at the time. No, I was still doing my MPhil, actually. I started working here in 1967. So that's really everything I can think of now.
Yeah, that's fine. That's perfect. You've had a very eventful
It was very colourful. It was colourful. And then, you know, when I left to have my daughter, I finally left the whole thing when I gave up the research job. Life seemed so quiet after that, just babies. And routine jobs for a while as well.
Right.